Welcome to the World of Wisdom podcast. My name is Amit Paul, and I'm very curious about the conversation that we're about to have. I tend to be, but this one is kind of on the very high. It's like it might be an 11 on the 10 grade scale of curiosity. So, but very welcome to the podcast, Karl-Erik Edris.
No pressure. Thank you. Well, I'm pleased to be with you. Hope we will find some interesting things to say.
I have a feeling that won't be a problem. I have this. I sometimes put a light frame around conversations, and actually, as I was skipping through the notes from our previous conversation, I did kind of stop. Pause at this idea of a paradigm shift, or like these mechanisms for how societies tend to shift or civilizations tend to shift, which was something that we touched upon towards the end of our last conversation. So maybe we'll go there if the conversation takes us there. But I'll start with the probably the hardest question, and the one I always start with, which is who are you, Karl-Erik Edris?
Who am I? Yeah, you start with a simple question. The simplest of all. No. Well, that depends upon the perspective. Who are you is if you have this ordinary view on this question. I think I will develop this somewhat. We live in a world where we are educated to believe that it is one life. It starts through some random processes, two random people meet and they like each other and have some sex, and there it is, and there it starts for no special purpose, and you come out and you are, and what you become from this process has to do with the genetics, heritage, the family, how they think, and so on, and the environment. And this is it. And you have, and then you discover sort of your inklings and inclinations, and then you try to be as famous and rich as possible, or just to survive. And then death comes, and it's all over, and it's. Yeah, that's the view we have of human beings. And who am I in this, if you have this perspective? Well, nobody. Or what is this? So it's a very surface interpretation. And then you are forced by this kind of overall thinking to start to talk about what you have done. You take the passport and say, well, I'm born there. I don't remember it, but it was on this date. And I lived with these people the first years, and then they got me to school, and I started to believe what they teach me. And here I am, and now I have worked with this and this. That's how we handle this question. And if I go along that path, I can speak about what I have been doing and what I'm still doing. Do you want me to do that? Or
perhaps
I'm born 77 years ago, still kicking. And I have spent my life mostly thinking. So the central idea when it comes, I will sort of change track a little bit here and say that the central idea with this interpretation of what the human being is that consciousness is created by the body. It's sort of an epiphenomena. But I am not of that belief. So I was born, or I took this body in 46, but I was born with some inklings or inclinations sort of life as a riddle, or I don't know what you have some, you are born with some questions, you are searching for something. And that meant that it took a while for me to get used to existing in this world and sort of find out, why am I here? Why was I dropped down among these people? What should I do? I started school, for instance, in 1953, and I could read and write, and I was quite good in counting and so on. Arithmetic wasn't, but I had learned that. And what happened? They started to try, I should learn how to read, but I already could read. So I just, what is this? Is this school? they teach me how to do something I already can. So that was very confusing for me. But now, from the perspective I have now, I find that as a blessing, because waked up the skeptical side of myself. So I didn't believe in these people. What are they teaching me? Why do they do like this? So I was very critical. I didn't read. I didn't follow it. I was smart enough to get okay degrees by just sitting there. But I didn't read, and I didn't work with the school material and so on, because I couldn't accept how it worked. I just wonder. I had I been born as a professor in socialization theories, I could perhaps contemplate on this case and try to figure out what they were trying to do with me. But I was negative to most of the things. And this developed in so that I was aggressive and depressed and had very difficulties in finding myself or see what I would do with this one. But most of the things changed when I started to meditate in 69. Then I had gone to the university reading mathematics and mathematical statistics and such things. But I wasn't good at it. I did it helped me to realize that my mind wasn't of the mathematical kind. So I started to meditate, and that changed my life totally. So,
what kind was your mind? If it wasn't mathematical. Well, then what kind of mind was it?
What kind of mind was it? Intuitional. It can imitate rational thinking. It's quite good at logical rational thinking, but it's primarily intuitive. I dropped that and dropped university altogether, and started later. I became a teacher of meditation then in 71, 72, somewhere around that time, and moved to Stockholm then 72, and started to work as a meditation teacher. But that was not the right place for me, so I couldn't. The TM technique, it had to do with the TM technique, and I have no problem with the TM technique, but the organization was too naive, or I viewed it too naive in political and other aspects of life, so I couldn't say those things that we were instructed to say about how things worked and so on. And in that, so I had to stop doing that, even if it was very interesting. I was even the leader for what was called then SIMS Sweden. SIMS was the Students International Meditation Society, was what this was called. So I met Maharishi, and yeah, that was very interesting. But anyway, it was not for me. So I dropped out and went. And I had an experience. I was on a bus from where we lived into the city, and I read Aftonbladet. And there was a small advertisement that suddenly became as big as the whole page. I sat there on the bus reading Aftonbladet. And that it was light, and it was very big, and it sort of flew up in my face. It was so intense. And I read what the small information there, and it had to do with a course on the university with science, samhällskunskap, knowledge social about sciences. Society. So it was sociology. It was a 40 points course in sociology, political science, national economy, and some other subjects I don't remember. And I felt compelled to start that course. And that led me back to the university. And then I got into political science and even worked at the PhD level. But what drew me in that direction was that I early on, perhaps as early as 60 or even earlier, felt that I couldn't believe the message that we were on the right track. Mm. It was very optimistic times, and everybody talked about science and the beautiful future and so on. And I couldn't believe that. And I had no intellectual capacity or knowledge to prove for teachers that they were wrong or that this was bullshit and problem. There will be many problems ahead. I couldn't fix that. I just felt it in my whole body. And nowadays I describe this in terms of old men having Vederben, as it is called in Swedish. That means that you feel changes in the weather in your own leg. Mm. And I sort of was born with a feeling in my leg, symbolically, that this is not true, but I could not prove it. But if you have that capacity, it doesn't matter what the meteorologist wants to tell you, because you believe your leg better, more than you believe those who say that they know how it is. And I had that feeling, but I had no way of finding people that believed in such things or thought in these directions. But on the course in the teacher training course in meditation, there were an old man from Switzerland called Walter something, and he had an exposition of eccentric interpretations of history that made me so happy. And he mentioned a French thinker called Fabre d'Olivier, and I could not read French, but I was very enthusiastic. And I had this as some track that I wanted to follow. So when I started at the university, and even earlier, I had started to come into philosophy of history. And there's a long tradition in Western civilization thinking in terms of civilizations, how they rise and fall. It started long, long ago. Plato, of course, was into it, and then it developed and became a Christian variant and so on. But I will not dwell on that. But I was immensely interested in these things. All my hair stood right up, and I read night and day about theories, Toynbee and Spengler and Pytrim Sorokin and all kinds of peculiar theories. I was very excited, very excited, because I felt this as if I had sort of come to a place, an island perhaps, where there were only old men thinking about civilizations growing and falling and apocalyptic theories, and I felt at home. And this was had affinity with how I deep inside sort of perceived the world, how it looked. So that helped me to interpret these things, but to do something at the PhD level back then, in this covering such subjects, then you were forced to ridicule them and try to prove that they were uninformed fools. Because there was no openness for such things then. Had I been a little bit younger, it would have been another matter. But then it was absolutely not possible, at least not for me. I was not bright enough to against all resistance against such theories. And the sort of, it was necessary to show that this was not true or worth ridicule, and but I couldn't do that because I believe they were, if not all right, they were onto something that we in our stupidity hadn't understood about our own situation. So therefore I had to leave the university.
Where are we in time now? Are we middle of the 70s or
70s, end of the 70s.
So it's okay. So it's still, and if I'm understanding you right, then what they were kind of saying was that civilizations fall and things turn,
yeah.
And there are dynamics that you felt were at play in what you were seeing of the world.
Yeah,
that people weren't wanting to look at, and this is still, I mean, 10 years after then, or roughly something after the Limits to Growth study, and so there was,
yeah.
There's still some sort of discourse around.
Yeah, but it was very difficult to, as every university institution has their own kind of thinking, and so I was not smart enough to introduce another type of thinking. It was not fundamentally accepted. And there was a lot of criticism against this Limits to Growth study. It was not at all accepted. And it's not fully accepted even now, I believe. There is a strong growth and technology wing still. So, yeah. Anyway, it was not, and I do not say that they did something wrong, but they helped me to understand that this was not the place for me. So I learned a lot. It was very interesting, and I studied many books, and I started to write on my own, and got my first book published in 1987, which was mainly a product of my intense studies at the university and even at home, of course. So that was an interesting part of my life, where I came in contact with things that I thought was worth it. And that was the first time in my life that I really seriously read something. Because I couldn't do things that wasn't acceptable for my inner senses, so how to express this. Or I could, of course, read things that I didn't accept, but that was for, you must read all kinds of things at the university, but when it comes to something that is close to your own perception or view on life and what you are going to write about, then it must ring true in your deepest essence. So
yeah.
So now we are in the 80s, and I have still not answered the question, who am I? But those who listen perhaps think that, well, it has some connection with your initial question. And in this connection also, I started what was and has been a big part of my life. I worked, I started in 73 or something when I started, 74 perhaps, when I re-entered the university. I financed it by selling tickets at the subway. And there were very many stations where there were very few passengers, so you could almost read undisturbed. So I had two big bags with literature and wrote, and that suited me perfectly. So when I couldn't continue at this PhD level, I just retreated to my ticket selling, and I worked at the station close to my home, so I had 6-7 minutes walk to the work, where I actually did what I usually did at my own writing table. I worked intensely reading and writing and translating also. So that was a very interesting part of, for me at least, interesting part of my life, when I wrote, published some books and translated. And after this book in 87, I started to get offers to speak for different groups. And it turned out that Handelshögskolan,
Stockholm School of Economics. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the English name, Stockholm School of Economics. They had leadership courses in something called EFL. Institutes for Företagsledning. They offer
executive courses. Training. Oh, executive education training. Or something like that.
And they start. Then they had courses, and I was in very many programs there. So I started a small firm, and so I worked at selling tickets, and then I had my gigs in this world, and learned a lot. And I found out that I was good, at least in Swedish, talking to people. So it worked out, and I learned a lot. So I wrote a book, Den vise ved, The Enlightened Executive, or The Wisdom Executive, something like that, which were a small success. So I was forced to drop my ticket selling and could then earn a living traveling around, speaking at different management and leadership courses. And so I started doing that and enjoyed that very much. And I'm still into that business, because even if I am interested in big abstract theories about society and deep ideas about the nature of man and the nature of life and consciousness and such things, which I have spent a lot of thinking on, I am also interested in what can we do practically just now. Because change, there are different dimensions of change. It is very important to change deeper beliefs and so on, but it must be done in practice. It's not just sitting in your chamber and thinking. You must convert it to practicality. So therefore, I'm still interested in leadership and how leaders think and what they believe and what they strive for. And that this is an aspect of the situation that there is much room for improvement in. So there is a, this is a some sort of answer to from a surface plane what I have been doing, spending my time doing, and some things about my interests, but only on the surface.
Yeah.
But if I go deeper into this, who am I? I have this sense I am not a proponent of the one life hypothesis, but have experiences and views that, so that I have belief in reincarnation, to state it simply. So I know where I come from. Not some of my history, earlier history, and what riddles I need to try to solve in this life. So I have been working on that, trying to understand. It has to do with leadership and the responsibilities of leadership and the depth of the understanding of people and the processes. We are development processes. We are so fixed on finding solutions in the short term, and we have no awareness of that we are in a development process which we do not control. So there is, what is this of being a human on this earth, trying to form societies and goals for this society, that we are included in a very interesting process that we must try to understand and follow. So, but now we have so overestimated our capacity, so we believe that we are those who we do not need to listen to anything but our logical and wrong conclusions. We must open to, it's like life, you know how life is. You feel that there is some force, there is something that you follow, certain doors open, and you can call this, of course, that it is random, and it is slump, and what is...
A random or chance.
No, yeah. That it is random, when it is not. I remember when I first saw this picture of a human being sitting in a room, and there is 500 doors. Someone has told this person, you have all possibilities. And you sit there and try to decide which door should I go open. Yeah. And suddenly a door opens and you go in there of curiosity. And then bang, and the door closes behind your back and you think, I have not decided to go through here. So you want to go back, but you couldn't open the door. And you start to think that these 499 other doors are not properly investigated, and I have not made a rational decision, and now I'm stuck here. But it isn't like that. This door was for you. The other doors was for some other people. It was not for you. The only door opened.
Yeah.
And this is your way, and this is your lessons, and this is your life. Follow it, do the best of it, and you have no conscious control over why it is like this. try to be grateful and do what life serves you. And then you try to take certain directions. But if they are not from the deepest level of yourself, you can sort of lose contact with your own life and start to get into trouble that you, why do you do that? But you have something to learn there.
I started paying attention to words, and then you were saying follow your life. And in English, there's also a way of saying it, to lead your life. And I just kind of skipped back to your curiosity around leadership and the responsibilities of leadership, and these sort of processes that we are in, or that are unfolding around us, or that we are part of unfolding, or however you want to say that, so that it's correct. But maybe there's a fork here where I get curious about that sort of the how you think about leadership, followership, and if you would unfold that a bit more. What is leadership, and what are the responsibilities, as you mentioned?
I am following a track here in my exposition, or what to call it, where. I think I instead would say that like this, that through these contemplations that I have done on civilizations, I will start on a more abstract level there and say that I am not of the idea that we have done something wrong, that our situation now has to do with us being wrong. Development is something else than being right. Development has to do with you are wrong in view of what you could be. So you cannot not make mistakes. Life is about learning and revealing your own stupidity to yourself, so that you can, in this revelation, draw the conclusion, I will try to do it in some other way. This is it. This is to be welcomed, because if you think this as a computer game, this is how it's programmed. You can have views on it, but this is how it is. So beings, reveal your own stupidity. That is the thing. And you should welcome that and believe yourself to be capable of solving the situations you have unwittingly put yourself in. Those who were firm and religious believers in economic progress forever and exponential growth, didn't do they that because they were evil and need to be sent to a correction facility somewhere. They were sincerely deluded, and it was constructive, and we learned things, but now it is another time. Mm. Now we need to sort of discover new ways of doing this, and we must do it together. So it's not this with blame and starting, that is just inhibiting our creative processes. Of course, there are perhaps evil and so on, but do not think too much about that, and do not want to point your finger at those who are wrong. That is not constructive. We are not, according to my opinion, in a tragedy if we don't want to. We will sort of do this tragedy if we value our own stupidity so highly that we cannot leave it behind and do something better. this is calls for development and to think in other ways. And I do not, this perhaps sounds that simple rhetoric, but as I believe this, in leadership, you have to listen to what is possible to do exactly where you are now. It's very easy to criticize what other people are doing. Mm. Yeah, such fools. But you have not been there, gone in their shoes, seen it, what possibilities they have, and why it perhaps is necessary to do some foolish things first before it is possible for a breakthrough. So focus on one's own situation, because there is the new things revealed if you stay focused and listen, or I don't know what words to use, but it will be revealed to you if you have your antennas up. And and if you are have enough skills in personal relations, you can implement this change together with them. So it's a group, a decentralized group transformation of the whole world. That is what is going on. And in places it is very interesting things happening. And in other places there is so much looking backwards, fighting for things that have never worked and want to keep them. And there will be war and destruction, because it's a very strong developmental force working at the time. So many things, wars and hard conflict where you want to keep things as they once were, that is in a certain sense unnecessary. But people are so attached to older forms that they will not release it, even if all indications are that this is not working. The situation calls for something else. And for this to be possible, we must release old ideas and open ourselves for other people and other ideas.
Mm.
And according to my opinion, it is not more difficult than this. This is it. We can transform this situation if we can keep this focus. We do not need a global solution, because then we will get some goodness fascists.
Mm-hmm.
Here I am, all-knowing, the Putin of goodness. I know everything. And so decentralized, responsive transformation. That is what I think is the thing. It will be messy and difficult and so on, but that is it. This is how it is.
I wanted to check something, but just kind of reiterating something that the way that I heard what you just said, it's like there are a few different factions that are currently maybe being the loudest in the world, I would say, and one are those people that are perhaps backward looking and fighting for something that was at some point, or that they, some interpretation of what they perceive now once was, and so forth. So wanting to go back, which is very hard. We haven't figured out time travel in that way yet. And so, but then on the other hand, you have the progressive agenda, which is, I mean, a lot of people that are fighting for what should be, or some sort of future, which is, it might come to pass or it might not, but it's definitely not now either. And there's a certain level that we can get stuck in that as well. And then usually there's, the future comes with a plan to get there. So it means that you have to do a thing that we aren't doing, and then everything is hopeless, or you know, it's tricky in that. But you were pointing to leadership as listening to what is possible to do where you are right now, which I thought was it points to a gap between those two things, there's just sort of the next step. And also in terms of what you were saying before with like sort of follow your life. And it's both, right? It's both follow and lead your life, but it's like to make the move that's possible and then see where it takes you and reorient and so forth. That's how I heard you speak about it. Is it somewhat?
My reaction to that is that we have beliefs about how what roads we must follow to come to the direction we want to come to. We have those who think that climate and nature is all, and we believe in apocalypse and climate change will make the planet inhabitable and so on. And from that belief, you have a strategy how we must live. And then we have the technique freaks that believe that we will solve all problems by further technological and scientific progress. We will almost come to a state of alchemy and full-fledged AI, and we will conquer the whole, the whole of the universe, sort of, for this brilliance. And we have other such beliefs. But I think that none of these are entirely correct. They are, so you must not believe these too strongly, because then you will be, then they will have the same function as old religions. They sort of diminish your imagination and forces you to be blind to certain things and forces you to stop impulses in your own inner world where you could find other and more constructive solutions. So I am skeptical to these grand ideas of in what direction we must go, and believe that we are not the ultimate leaders of our own evolution. That is a illusion, very strong illusion. We are sort of helping, if you say the program, there is an evolution. We have not in our minds an understanding of what is evolution. We have started as humanoids, we have Neanderthals, whatever. We have all these. What has driven this? Have we done it? No, we are. It is as a theater. We have started in a theater, but we have not got the script. We get some replique, what it is called. Yeah, something happened, and it is 500 years searching for this. So this is a very long process, and we do not know what the present mess will end in, but we can be sure, according to my view, that it is revealed in our inner space if we could listen to it. And then we try to, this is our task living here on Earth. This is to listen to what is possible, open ourselves for that, and do something creative and practical about it. And to be very, it's all about unity and love and such beautiful things. It is, there is the key, there is the key. We are doing too much about the differences between us.
Mm.
We are very, inside we are one species and there is not much difference. We are as grapes on a, what is the,
yeah, whatever that's called. I don't know.
Yeah, you don't yeah. know. It's Klaus in Swedish.
Yeah.
But they come in packages at least. They grow like this, grapes. Mm. We are as grapes on the same those who listen to us, perhaps.
Bush. Yeah, exactly.
But they see it anyway. So, but we struggle and we say we are better than you, and we need to bomb you, and we need to do this, and this is necessary for our class, and so on. This is always dead ends, but sometimes necessary, because different brutalities do not only destroy things outside, it destroys also irrelevant ideas, or ideas that were perhaps relevant in the past but are no longer relevant.
Mm.
So I am an optimistic man. I think that this is not written as a tragedy. It is written like an opportunity for creative transformation going on to something that we cannot understand presently, because we are not close to the end. The philosopher Hegel had some very nice expression about Minerva's owl, that it is only flying at the skymning dusk. When we are close to the end, we will understand, but we are not at all close to the end. We are not at all close to the end. This is a long story. This is a very long story. So, are you properly confused now?
No, there's so much here. There's something around this piece of about believing in something beyond ourselves, maybe, or our selves. Yeah, I think so. And in a way, I spoke to someone a little while back who has been studying the Bible, and she said to me, she's like, what I perceive the Bible to be about, the one thing that it seems to be about consistently throughout the whole thing is to remind us that there's something bigger than us. And you need a whole book to do that, and centering, you know, all of the stuff that we've done with that book. And so, but it's this whole thing that we spent time on putting together to remind ourselves that there's something bigger than us. I thought that was curious. And then as you were speaking about this sort of the technology narrative or the sustainability narrative or like these grand stories that are playing out in the theater, in the society, then I thought to myself, I thought like, oh, but it's something to be inspired by. And then I thought about the sort of etymology, or at least of how I've been taught that it works. But inspired has something to do with the spirit, that the spirit, a certain spirit fills you with something. It's like inspirare, or maybe it has to do with breath, but I've heard the story of the spirit filling you. And so I was sort of curious about that as well, that there's this particular one thing that's, you know, a part truth maybe that fills you. But if we believe that the part truth is the whole truth, that gets us in all kinds of trouble, instead of kind of holding it tentatively.
That's the problem, because there is two things here. The overall arching belief that this is right, and then which we do not need to know what is totally right, but we need to know where we are thought to be. Where is my place in the world? What should I do? This is it. I work with these people for this purpose. And it doesn't need to be the best of all purposes overall, but it is the best for me. This is my place. It is here that I am so constructed that I can be most receptive to what is the right thing to do right now. This seems abstract, but instead think of driving a car. you need to be very precisely aware of what is happening now. You have a vague idea how it is, where you are traveling to if you have not been there before. You know some of the ways you are going to follow, but you need to be very precisely aware of what is happening now. Otherwise, perhaps the traveling will stop. Something will happen. You need to be aware now. And that is a very important element in living a meaningful life. The being present where you are all the time. This is my life. Here is where I am optimally using this very opaque, or I don't know what to call it. When you are pressed into this meat costume, your senses become duller. It is very difficult to see. And there is a lot of people trying to impress you with their own shit or enlightenment, and you are formed there, and you have perhaps some inkling of, but this is true for me. Whatever they have told me, whatever has happened, there is a thin thread of light. This is the right thing for me. And the better contact you can have with these inner things, I think the social ideas come out of that, solves itself from that, because the coordination between, there is a level of coordination. We believe ourselves to be so separate, but we belong together. And if we are sensitive inside, we can feel what our tribe is, where we should work and what we should do. And I believe that this is the transformation with the least suffering. Because if you are hypnotized by different ideologies and do things that you have not deep contact in your inner person, that this is absolutely the right thing to do, you will create more suffering.
That seems to also pull on this thread of belonging that I'm hearing. I mean, it's a topic, at least in terms of some of the leadership theory and so forth that I'm hanging out with right now, but that there's a lot of need for belonging, or that we feel like there's at least in the Western world, maybe that people feel lonely or separated or not connected and so forth. And then if we spend the time, I don't know if I can put this into words, but if we spend our time thinking that we're not belonging and focusing on belonging, then I wonder how that sits with, if we're looking for the golden thread, or if we're listening to those movements or whispers that are inside us or part of us or something like that, versus longing for things that we don't have. It just, there seems to be what I'm trying to get at. It's like there seems to be a bridge here between this concept of abundance that some people talk about in spiritual circles, that if we can believe that we have what we need, then there is a way for us to use that to discover where we're going, and then we can skillfully drive the car, if we go to your analogy. But I'm just talking about this because I heard that thread. It was just a different way of coming into this concept of abundance, which I've been struggling with a lot than I've ever been able to do before. So I don't know if that relates to what you were actually saying, or if it was just my own internal dialogue.
I understand what you say like this, that we have the solutions of the problems we have created and perceive are with us. We are not that helpless. We have an abundance of creativity. Yeah. We are not. We have told stories about our uselessness, and that we need to believe in priests and ideologies and all kinds of shit. But we have it inside ourselves. you can call it abundance or whatever, but we have it in ourselves. But we are also very many, and there is equality. So it is not that now I have found my truth, and that is so extraordinary. So you, all you other people, should shut up and follow me. Why? We are, I once thought about Moses, and he went to the top of the Sinai and got down there with his
tablets.
But we are all, we could all go to Sinai and get these things. There is no, we are all prophets, if we could believe it. And if we then could cooperate with the other prophets, we do not need to start our own churches. We just need to do the best we can together with the people that belongs to our situation. That it could be a problem that need to be solved. And it is 15 people born in different places that need to find each other and sit in the same room and work together and do this, and it will be a contribution to humanity. If we all could find these processes, I have worked with these things more or less skillfully or skilllessly my whole life, and therefore I am still quite vital because I do not sense the end of my existence as Karl-Erik yet. I see that I have a lot to do yet, and then I will do that and find that. Sooner or later, of course, I will dispose of my body and recharge on some other in some other dimension, and then find new situations to contribute to this adventure of creation with humans and all kinds of other existences. So and that is why I talk about also the butterfly, that we are living in the time of the butterfly. We are focusing on the larva and the difficulties, but there is rich possibilities ahead if we could diminish our efforts to hinder it.
Good possibilities ahead if we can diminish our efforts to hinder it.
That was perhaps the end.
That might have been that there's one end. Let's use an end.
My mouth could still contribute with more or less relevant comments.
Yeah. But there is something here around there was a movement that stopped, and things like time matter at the moment because I need to take kids to handball and stuff like that. So maybe it is a good pause point and at least a chance to reassess. And I'm wondering if people want to find you and interact with you, where can they look, or like the books that you've written? Probably mostly in Swedish, but
I can say something more about this, because the fear level is not good for creativity or finding. If you don't believe in grand ideas about evil taking over, or we are doomed, that all these kinds of ideas, if we are, it will anyway not be your fault. The responsibility will not lie in your knees, so to say. Don't believe in these things. Believe in your own possibility to contribute with something good. And try to do that. And that is enough. we are 8 billion people. To talk about statistics, there is very small chances that I was the one who had the key to the future. We have a key to the future, but we have 8 billion keys to the future. Find your thing and do that, and try to see the positive things. Not that you should close your eyes to problems, but there is no idea of being excited or angry about all kinds of things, but because these emotions also helps you lose your focus. You do not see what is important in your life. You get angry at the other car drivers and say they should do their thing. Yeah, but are you doing their thing? What's your purpose, to criticize all other idiots? Don't you your own idiocy quota increases when you criticize things that you are not exactly responsible for or fully informed about? Criticism is, analyzing is very good, but criticism, excitement, anger, all kinds of emotions makes the atmosphere cloudy. Much more difficult to see clearly. And you hate politicians and all kinds of rubbish. Do not contribute to that. Try to get the atmosphere clear so that it will be easier to see what is creatively possible in this situation. That we can contribute that by thinking one negative thought less each day, not judge here and there and tell and all these things. Don't engage yourself in that. That is one message that I think is very important. Try to clear the atmosphere so that you can see what to do and how people get in contact with me. I don't know. Listen to this.
Listen to this.
Or contact someone that is like me, if you think that is attractive. Or so, I don't know. Maybe I should write a book in English.
I will.
I have no guru ambitions. I have no guru ambitions.
Just interesting to have these conversations, because there's something around, in a way, the simplicity, because I entered into this conversation thinking we were going to talk about worlds and philosophy and things that were large and hard to conceptualize or grasp maybe, but in a way it's like this is equally hard to grasp, but it's in the, it lives in me as the micro, and I have all these invitations to look at my life, from this, and there are all these invitations for me to be in alignment, and I can hear this little voice going in my head saying, no, don't go, like, don't touch that, don't pull that thread, like, don't start changing there, or don't, but there's so much in the simplicity of just listening to what the next step is, and to relaxing enough so that I can hear.
There it is in your life, because if you can just believe that if 8 billion people are better aligned with their inner truth, not hypnotized by all kinds of shit they have heard or been impressed by people driving certain agendas, this would change the world immediately. This is so underestimated. You believe that being angry at people in power and such things is necessary. No, it's not. Because you can also change who's in power. by being centered, by being focused, by being very present in your own life. If you have a country with only with inhabitants that are fully present in their own life, you do not have simplistically thinking people in power. That is impossible. How the leaders all say something about the people and their level of confusion. So you can say that, oh, I am a victim of bad leadership. Oh, you are. But how have you contributed to it? Scapegoating is never true. You have always your own responsibility. So this with the inner focus is very, very important. And then from this follows what you expected me to talk about, grand theories about civilization. It is just one other aspect of it that I believe is more important than understanding grand theories. But if you need grand theories to be better at being focused in your own life, then they are excellent. But not all people need grand theories. But I can talk about grand theories also, but this is my passion now. Being focused in your own life. And it has partly to do with my perception of how young people, or the younger people, that is a generation with much more realized light. There is, when I was born, there was much more darkness in right after the Second World War, much darkness, grosser people, more fog in the atmosphere. And then there started to come the younger generations, but they have much more potential, and that gives me hope. But there are still very strong, confusing theories that sort of try to disperse this group and try to get it focused on wrong things and tries to get it depressed and all kinds of different things that makes it difficult for them to show the light potential that they have already realized but not fully believe it. So therefore I think this is very important to try to find your body, stay focused inside. Don't catastrophize about all kinds of things. Do your things as to the best of your ability and try to develop all the time. This life is not about saying, oh, I was always right. Of course, you must confront your own fool and try to help him. De-foolish him. Or her, or him, or or they.
Thank you so much, Karl-Erik, for taking the time. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.